irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to LA Talk Radio. You're listening, of course, to the Writer's Block, coming to you live on worldwide from my secret little studio here in the Sawtooth Mountain Range of southwestern Oregon. Or no, Idaho. I don't even know where I live. And I'm looking at my co-host, Mr. Richard Polinelli, sitting there in Fruta, Colorado. Hello, Richard.
Hey, Jim, how's it going? I'm hanging out in the Grand Valley of the Western Slope of Colorado.
Oh, my God. There is a Grand Valley in the Western Slope of Colorado.
Yeah, it makes the Central Valley of California look good.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, my gosh. We have a great show tonight. But, you know, first, there's something I have to say first. And I have to commend of the folks at LA Talk Radio that have been for 6 years now, they've been our home. We have broadcasted to how many hundreds of thousands of listeners over the years. And we are grateful for every listener we've had. We are grateful to Sam Hassan, the owner of LA Talk Radio, that gave us the opportunity initially to get on the air. And it's been a great marriage as far as I'm concerned. With LA Talk Radio. And hey, you can't do any better than LA Talk Radio if you want to go live broadcasting around the world. You just can't do it. There's a lot of places offered. There's a lot of places available. But as far as I'm concerned, LA Talk Radio is our home and will remain our home for hopefully for the next 6 years and above. And right now, I have to say thank you also to our producer, the bookie, Jerry Christina, who works her butt off daily to make sure our guests are lined up, as our guest tonight will attest that she is constant contact with our guests and making sure that they understand and realize and remember they are on the show on Thursday night. And so they all are appreciative of Jerry, I'm sure, as I am, because she takes a lot off our plates. And with that being said, Richard, I believe you have an announcement or two.
Yeah, we have some news. For people out there who have been reading the Planetary series produced by Tuscany Bay Books, in the past you had to go to Amazon to get the ebook version, and that's the only place you could get that. We have made some changes to that. You're going to be able to, if you're a Nook owner or you've got your Apple iPhone and you've got Apple Books, or you're hooked up to Kobo or any of the other ebook platforms that are out there, starting tomorrow, I hope, we'll have all of the books, with the exception of the last one, which we've got to wait for a couple of weeks. They'll all be available on all those platforms for the same price you get them on Amazon. So if you've been out there wanting to read this, but you don't want to give Jeff Bezos any more money, now you don't have to, and you can still read the books. So those are all out. All 9 of my solo books are out on those platforms as well. So we're kind of branching out. And we're going to kind of look and see if this is something a lot of people out there are wanting to do and wanting to get into. So you can check out the Tuscany Bay Books website. You can check out my website and see where you can go to get all these. We'll have the universal links to all of them posted by tomorrow about noon. And there is a book we featured here on the show about 3 years ago. And it's kind of near and dear to my heart. Tuscany Bay isn't publishing it, but it was called Eerie, and it was written by an author named Gibson Michaels. And he had passed away September 7th, 2017. 4 years later, on that same day, September 7th, his final book, Eerie, is going to be released. It'll be in print. It'll be an ebook. There have been a lot of people working on this thing. We had some hangups. We fought through them, and I'm as happy as I can be that it's finally going to get out there. So if you've been kind of keeping an eye on that, we apologize for the delay, but it's finally hitting. And then one final note, if you are an author who has a book and you want to reach out to our hundreds of thousands of listeners who read books, you can do so by giving us a call or sending Jim an email, actually, at jchristina@TuscanyBayBooks.com. It's $25 each week. You can sign up for as many weeks as you want. We will let you know what you need to provide us. We'll give you like a 30 to 40 second blurb on the show, and we will be posting links on our websites as well. So this is a great way to let people know your book's out there. So if you're interested in something like that, give us a email and we'll get you set up. Excellent. And that's it. That's all, folks.
Excellent. And that actually primarily is known as cheap advertising.
Very.
From a cheap radio show. From
I don't know if I would say cheap.
I didn't mean cheap. I mean, you know. Hey, nobody. If you think you have a radio show that you'd like to have on the air, and if you really think that you can be a host on a radio show, I'll tell you what. You go to latalkradio.com and you click on the button, be a host. And I'll tell you, Sam will take care of you. He'll get you on the air. The cost is minimal compared to what you get weekly. And it's just a great deal if you've got, you know, what it takes to be a host. Nobody, of course, can follow the writer's block, but people do try. And but that's them. You know, we know that you won't fail because you, of course, are a great person and a wonderful radio host and whoever you are out there. But I urge you, if you think you have what it takes to be a host, contact Sam Hassan, Hassan, at latalkradio.com. Go to it, be a host, and sign up if you're really interested in becoming a host, because Sam is a great place to work for, or is a great place to work with, and Sam is a wonderful, wonderful man and a great owner, and he's really taken care of us over the years. Okay. Our guest tonight, we're going to get into you now. Our guest tonight was born Ace Mendezi. I'm gonna guess that it's Ace Mendez, Daisy, Deezy. Come on, Ace.
Assi Mendezi,
Nazandi Hall, in Queens, New York. He has received a BFA from CW Post, Long Island University. He's a two-time honorable mention winner in the Writers and Illustrators of the Future Award. He is also the author of the novels, Owari.
Yes, perfect.
Oh, yay! Owari Mosaic, and Confessions of a Silva Slasher. I've got to find out about. And a nonfiction book, Lord of the Flies: Fitness for Writers. Please, without any further ado, can you please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Ace Antonio Hall. Hello, Ace.
Hey. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. This is like such a great honor to be on LA Talk Radio. It's great. The Writer's Block. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, you are in. You're at the apex of your career, I'm telling you. Actually, I think the apex of your career was the football player on Ray. Was it Ray Donovan?
Oh, no. What's the name? Dexter.
Oh, Dexter, that's right. Yeah. Dexter.
No, that was a very, very small bit part.
But that's okay. We went back and found the episode you were on.
You what? Yeah.
I have all seven seasons of Dexter.
That's awesome.
And Richard's over there shaking his head, as you can see, going, yeah, it figures.
Hey, it beats my Soul TV spot, which was running backwards is Ben Roethlisberger and Oakland Raiders defensive end were about to run into me.
That's awesome.
2 seconds of fame right there.
There you go. I'm gonna let you know that Richard and I both read this book. Whereas if you're a lover of dystopia and dystopian novels and fantasy, you're gonna love this book. My only comment is I was so confused most of the way through it. I think I read the book twice just to go back and reread parts.
Okay.
And I'll bet you anything that's not the first time you've heard that.
No, yeah. You know, I worked on a show as a stand-in called How to Get Away with Murder.
Uh-huh.
A lot of my friends who watched that show said that it was very confusing, and it really was because it was a lot of back and forth. And
right.
Maybe through osmosis, you know, that came through my writing. I just wanted to write something that was like a puzzle that you really had to put the pieces together and really had to get into and read. And
uh-huh.
In the process, I guess it was a little bit, you know, you could get confused here and there.
Well, but it was.
It's a great unfolding of a story. And once you see all the puzzles, you know, pieced together, I think, you know, anyone who reads it will really enjoy it.
Well, it is different. I'm going to say right up front, it is a different type of story and a different read than I have ever read before.
Awesome.
I think I found it exceptionally difficult to keep up with it because it flips back and forth so quickly.
Yep.
And your heroine is like a gamer.
Yeah.
Only the games take place in her head.
Yeah. Virtual reality.
In their virtual reality, correct. At one point, she's in a game, and her partner comes in and goes, "What are you doing in my brain? Get out! I'm doing something else. Leave."
Yeah, you know, I was always interested in all types of stories that had to do with the consciousness. Uh-huh. I know that there is so much to our consciousness that, you know, everyone knows that we haven't explored yet, but there's really something to that sixth sense. And I always try to explore different realities about what our consciousness can really do. So just imagine if we were able to have like a computer, a neural implant that had internet access, you know, it would be the boundaries that we could cross. I mean, we could do so many different things with that. So I kind of explored a lot of those different theories in the book.
You know, uh-huh.
Make it like a virtual reality game, a VR game. So, well, yeah.
Being the writer that you are, don't you kind of feel on the side that our brains are set up for something like that anyway?
Yes. Haven't you ever? I mean, come on. Have you ever? Do you have dogs? Do any of you have dogs?
Oh, yeah, I do. Well, we both do.
So I used to sit down and watch TV, and my dog's not even looking at the TV, and someone yawns on the TV, and the dog yawns, you know?
Okay, yeah.
Or I've been in an environment, and a person's not even looking at me, and I yawn, and they yawn.
Right.
There's something to that, you know? They're not even, now I can understand if someone sees you yawning and we yawn, you know, you get that part, suggestive. But, you know, there's something about our consciousness where there's a whole nother awareness. Right now, your body is doing 1,000 different things. And, you know, really all you're doing is listening, talking, and you know, using your eyes. But your body's healing a cut you may have had. It's doing so many things. So I wanted to delve into, you know, I love writing stories that have to do with, you know, the imagination and what our consciousness can tap into. I love that.
Yeah, well, I mean, your neurotransmitters in your brain carry so much information that if we really, I think, tried to understand what was going on, it would probably kill us.
I mean, to be honest, it gives you a headache when you start thinking about it too much.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I wanted to write a story. I grew up loving, I mean, I'll watch it even right now. If it comes on TV right now, if I'm flipping through, I'll watch it. Quincy Medical Examiner.
Oh, me too. I love that show.
Oh, my gosh. I even love the theme song. I love the theme song, everything about it. I'll watch, you know, a lot of people skip through, you know, like you skip through the theme song.
Right.
I watch the whole thing and laugh every time. But I love that kind of show, and I always wanted to write something that captured a character that had, you know, Jack Klugman's, you know, Quincy's emotional, you know, the passion he had for always trying to find the truth and looking out for the innocence.
Right.
That meticulous approach he had towards forensic science. But at the same time, I was a teacher, and I taught middle school kids for about 13 years.
Right.
And I'm a kid at heart. I love like the Steven Spielberg movies that have kids in them, the Stephen King movies and novels that have like Stand By Me that have kids in them. And I wanted to kind of group those two things together. So the book is a little different. And
then right.
Sherlock Holmes, the night before I did my final edit, before I turned that book in, I did so many different changes after watching The Hound of Baskerville.
Well, great movie.
I watched it. You know, I've watched it so many times. One night I flipped it on and I watched it and I said, wow, this whole technique, I want to figure out a way to kind of apply this technique to my book. And I rewrote my book. It took me about 11 hours.
Right.
I rewrote a lot of different parts after watching that movie. So
right.
It's different. It's like a combination of those three things.
Hang tough, Richard. Don't go away, Ace. We're going to be right back with you. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block, and we'll be right back with you after this real brief message from LA Talk Radio.
Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com. Find the link that says be a host and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say. And if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com. And listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are back with our guest, Mr. Ace Antonio Hall, and of course, Richard Polinelli and myself. And we're talking about his new book, Oware Mosaic. Okay. And if you want to call and talk to Ace, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And that'll get you right through Mr. Hall himself. And you can actually ask him your own question. But right now I have a comment, and I think you bringing up Hound of the Baskervilles brought back I think you did this in your novel, and I'm not sure that – well, you probably did, and nobody caught it. You followed the way that they presented stuff in the – because Hound of the Baskervilles, the fear and the scary part comes from the lighting and the darkness of the entire movie.
Yes.
Which is wonderful thing about black and white. You can do that.
Yeah.
And you kind of almost threw that black and white into this story. Am I right?
Yeah. You know, I really focus a lot on making sure that when someone reads my book, they can see it. They can visualize it.
Uh-huh.
Just bringing the pages to life. And so part of that is creating, you know, a mood out of the lighting and out of the sounds and trying to create that. So, yeah, I did do that, you know, because I actually went back and watched the film and took notes. Okay, this happened in this scene, this happened in this scene, this happened in this scene.
Right.
I translate that differently, you know, but the same, like, you know, like creating a chocolate chip cookie, but with my own ingredients. You know,
how okay.
It tastes good. But it's my own recipe.
Well, that'd be an ace. That'd be an ace chip movie. Hey, Richard, I'm sure you have something to say.
Well, No. Because we're on the Hounds of the Baskervilles. I now, because you said black and white. No, you're talking about the Basil Rathbone version.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. Is that the one you watched, Ace?
Is there another version?
There are numerous. I was going to say my favorite version is Ian Richardson as Holmes. It was done in the late 70s, early 80s.
Right.
And then Jeremy Brett came along, who I think is the best Holmes ever, and people can argue with me all they want. I don't care. So he did a version of it. So I always ask people when they bring that movie up, if you've watched more than one version, and which one, if you have, is your favorite. But sounds like you guys are the old school guys.
Well,
and
Jeremy,
I'm kind of the new kid on the block here.
Jeremy Brett was the cocaine Holmes. He used to do cocaine in 212B Baker Street.
Right.
And with Watson. I mean, they were cokeheads, let's face it. But I like the original with Basil Rathbone was noir. And I love noir. I love it because the mood it puts out, the lighting is just, I mean, it makes the movie normally.
And you got to catch the Ian Richardson version.
I will go back and watch those because a lot of times it's so funny. You know, I just turned 55 on the 4th of July. And I look back in many of the movies that I saw before 30. If I haven't watched them more than two or three times, I don't even remember them until I see them again.
Oh, so yeah.
Go back and watch those movies. But I'll tell you something.
I'm a movie trivia guy. You don't want to play Trivial Pursuit if it's just about movies with me, because I'll mop the board with you guys. So, I mean, it's obscure films, too. You could throw some weird thing from Albania at me, and I'll tell you the cast and the director and the whole thing. So let's get back to your book. No, seriously.
Yes.
Let's get back to your book, because there was a thing you did, a concept you brought up that I think – a lot of sci-fi writers are starting to explore, because we're starting to get to a point where it may become science fact.
Yeah.
Is you have a person who has died and their consciousness is downloaded into a clone, which looks exactly like them.
Yeah.
And I thought, to me, that was one of the concepts in your book that really stood out. I really enjoyed reading about that. What sparked that idea for you to do that?
You know, I guess, you know, a lot of people say, where do I get my ideas? It's kind of like that kind of question. And a lot of things just come to me. You know, I wake up like, wow, that's a great idea. And then I write it down. And then hours later, I see that stinks, you know, that kind of thing. And then a lot of things happen just through a lot of reading and a lot of just watching a lot of different television shows. And I got to tell you, sometimes the ideas come to me and I think they're organic. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think, you know, five people can think of the same thing at the same time. But a lot of, you know, when I thought of those ideas, sometimes I'll take an idea, I'll write something down, and then I see it like on a, you know, on a TV show, a sci-fi show. And then I say, oh, it's already been done. And I change the concept. But, that same thing happened to me. I wrote about a seventh draft of it. So it was pretty much done. I think I did about 10 drafts. So it was pretty much done. The meat of the story. And then Alter Carbon came out. And I said, oh my God, did this guy did he steal my, you know, what happened? He stole my concept.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm pretty sure, I think I looked it up, I can't remember now, that the TV series is based on a novel. Most of them are. So the novel might have came out a long time ago. I never read the novel. But, you know, I went back and I had to fine-tune a few things because it seemed like the same thing. Always in the back of my mind is Neuromancer, you know, by William Gibson. And I remember when I saw Matrix and I said, they stole that from Neuromancer, you know. Mm-hmm. And I went back and read Neuromancer again, and there were a lot of similarities. So maybe, you know, I mean, just reading those type of books, you know, just kind of, you know, that idea kind of crafted itself. Maybe it was organic, you know, maybe it was influenced by those movies. I really can't tell you. But, you know, I'm always exploring. I guess it's my own, you know, I've had a lot of deaths in my family. You know, when I was 19 years old, I got married. 5 days later, my wife passed away. You know, that was one of my first tragedies. And I've had a lot of deaths, you know. And I'm always exploring what happens after that. There's got to be something else. It's, you know, it's very optimistic. And being a sci-fi writer, you know, you want something else to happen. You want to think that we can hold on to this consciousness, you know, which I call a sham, SHOM. We can hold on to these shams, you know, and somehow, you know, bring that essence through artificial intelligence. And so, you know, that's a concept that is now in my universe, in my world, in the new book that I'm writing now, and in the book that's coming out in September, called Lipstick Asylum. You know, I'm tapping into those type of theories and concepts.
Yeah. Excellent. It's similar to what they did in Replicas.
In what?
Where Replicas, the movie Replicas, I don't know if you saw it with Keanu Reeves, where he
That was on Netflix. Was that on Netflix?
It's been out for a while. But you know, his wife and family pass away in an accident, and he is able to download everything from them And then they have this strange process where they bring the clones to life after X amount of days, and you upload the memories and everything into the bodies. Only in his case, he had to delete because he couldn't bring back the entire family. Oh. And he knew if he brought them back and this one's missing, he's got a mess on his hands. So he had to go into their memories and delete the memory of one of his children. Right. It was an amazing concept. Yeah. The movie could have been pulled off a little bit better, but I mean, the concept to me was great. And that's what I look at in books and movies, is concepts like what you did, and see how they're executed, and then kind of try to learn from that and apply it to what I'm doing. Oh, so I was really kind of wanting to get into how you came up with that one, because it's a great idea.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really out of a need of, I want something more, you know. There's got to be something more in our lives after this life. Really, that need of trying to discover that, really.
Right.
Let me ask you real quick, and I'm going to ask a pretty, like, a 4-minute answer if you can do it.
Okay. No pressure.
If
you brought your guitar and you can play a couple of strings for us, because I saw you on a YouTube video and you sounded great. Your band sounds fantastic.
Thank you. That was my old band Sundown, and I wrote all that music, incidentally.
What?
Yeah.
You know, I told you on a pre-call that I'm a Seattle guy. All of the Seattle bands, from Jimi Hendrix to Soundgarden and Nirvana,
right.
Alice in Chains, I love all of that. So I know you have a great sound. I love it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was, I mean, we used to do like 3-part harmonies on acoustic guitars.
I love it.
And then 2- and 3-part harmonies and vocals. And so we had a lot of fun. I wrote a lot of music for that band. So
you got to play your music, man. You got to play it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, maybe I can talk Sam into throwing one on here in a little bit. But but right now, in 3 minutes now, if you can give us a brief description and a brief synopsis of this book, and kind of give our listeners an idea of what it actually is about.
Yeah, so A Wired Mosaic is it's a procedural, basically a medical procedural. And it's about a young girl who learned how to be a forensic scientist through a virtual reality game. And she got so good at it that she could actually be a medical examiner in real life, but she was too young. And so, you know, whenever she went to the medical examiner's office for a job, they basically laughed at her and said, come back when you're older. So she was a forensic scientist in the game, and she had partners in the game. Now, we all know the term avatar. So in the game, you can be whatever avatar that you want. You don't have to look like your normal self. So she had an in-game partner, and she played a lot with this in-game partner, and they realized that they were the only ones that had this game, to the point that, you know, they couldn't really express, you know, that they played the game to anyone else, and they didn't know why it was such a secret. So that's one part of it. Why was this game a secret? Why were they the only two that had this technology? And mind you, the technology was implanted in their brain in a neural implant called a NIM, N-I-M, a neural implant. Why did they have this virtual reality game in their NIM? So one night in the real life, she's coming home from a party, you know, the young girl, her name's Feeny Zoe, XO. Feeny Zoe's coming home from a party, and it's raining, and she's driving her brother's car, and boom, boom, she hits something. Well, she gets out the car, and she sees that it appears that she's run over a young girl, and she killed the girl. She doesn't know what to do. She calls her brother. Her brother works for the police force. He comes with another partner of his, and it's a cover up. Feeny finds out that the girl that she killed is actually the sister of her in game partner. Oh my God! So now she's filled with guilt. Her in game partner wants to find out who killed her sister, and they begin an investigation. The game that they played in their neural implant is a game that's used to find cold cases. So they use actual real police cold cases, and all of a sudden, suddenly, that case of the young girl is not a cold case, and it pops up. And so the whole story is about them trying to uncover who really killed the little girl. And
excellent.
Yeah. And so
we don't give spoiler alerts on this show, Ace, so you don't have to worry about us telling anything.
All right.
Like we won't say who the guy that died and his brain and his thoughts wound up in another body. We won't tell you that.
What?
But at any rate, hang on just a second and we'll be right back with you. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to the Writer's Block with Richard Polinelli and Bobby Jean Bell, who is on hiatus this week. And we'll be back right after this brief message from Black Dog Publishing in Tuscany, Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published. And right now, we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back. You can call and talk to Mr. Ace Hall if you want. The number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And Sam, if you're listening, if you wouldn't mind playing about 30 seconds of a song you have in your queue there called Something That Is Right. I don't know if Sam's listening. He must be.
Nothing there, Jim.
Uh-oh.
Really? What about Time Is Time?
Nothing here, man. Not on this screen. I don't know. Do you want me to find it real quick?
If you can, and just let us know when you got it.
Okay.
All right, so.
You know, Sam's the new guy in the engineer booth. Cut him a little soft.
I know. Owner of the station, and he can't even find a song.
Right? Yeah. Well, well, that's why you have to prepare in advance, you know.
Tell me something. He threw it on me, so I'm going to throw it on you.
All right. What's the name of the song again, real quick?
Try Something That Is Right.
Okay, got it. Hold on a second.
Okay.
So you want only a few seconds of it?
30, 40 seconds is all we need.
Okay, yes. Here you go. Hang on.
Thank you.
Yes.
This is for you, Ace.
Well, I'm trying to get it to work. There we go. Hold on.
Doing something that is right don't make it easy when it's done. To turn around and walk away.
Okay. Well, you kind of get the idea. That's Something That Is Right is by our band Sundown in Seattle, Washington in the early 80s. And written by me and played sung by David Audie, who was a great, great, great singer. Okay,
I'm telling you, LA, go check out Sundown. You will not regret it. You'll love them.
Oh, thank you so much. Okay, Ace, now comes the big question. When you're laying in bed at night and your brain is going 1,000 miles an hour, like all writers are, we never stop working ever. Where's your brain going? Is it going to new stories? Is it going to perfecting stories you've already written? Is it all of the above?
It's a great, great question. And I'll add to that. One of my buddies asks me all the time, Ace, what do you do all day? And part of that, especially at night, is I'm going back in my head over the story I'm writing now. And sometimes the characters start to actually talk to me, or maybe I'm talking myself, talking to characters, you know, their dialogue out loud. And I'll say, you know what, that doesn't sound right. Or, you know what, this could be tweaked a little bit better. And I'm always doing that. I didn't used to do that. I used to just write a story from beginning to end. I'd go into Starbucks, literally, on my first novel, the first novel that was published, Confessions of Silver Slasher. I'd go into Starbucks at 5 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, and I'd leave 11 o'clock at night. The Starbucks right on Shoup in Woodland Hills. And, you know, I turn my phone over. I have a bunch of coffees. I have to take pain pills, and my back is killing me. But, you know, I just couldn't stop writing. Now what I do is, you know, I structure it out. I write. But every day I look back over what I've written and I tweak it. So yep. At night, when I'm laying in bed, while I'm yep. going to sleep, I say, okay, so tomorrow I want to work on, you know, this scene and try to, how can I make this scene stronger, you know, and bring it more to life. So that's what I do.
Yeah. You know, and most writers do the same thing. We all do it. Richard does it. I do it. And, you know, I don't know if you know who Shelley Berman is. He was a great, great comedian from the 50s and early 60s. I mean, the guy was wonderful. And they asked him one time, they said, Shelley, what do you do all day? You're a comedian. What do you do during the day? And he sat there and he looked at him and he says, I create.
Yes.
Which is a hell of an easy out. And it really is. They ask you, what do you do all day? I write, or I think. I work on stuff. And it isn't easy.
I write in my head. That's thinking.
Exactly. Okay, we're going to ask you the question now. We have a question we ask all of our authors that come on the Writer's Block, and it's a question that some can answer and some can't. Of course, the name of the show is The Writer's Block, as you so profoundly put it out at the first of the show. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it?
I feel like a lot of writers will hate me when I say this, but I don't really understand the concept of writer's block.
You watching Richard?
Yeah.
He loves you.
So here's what I do. So if I'm writing or fleshing out a scene or a story, first of all, I'm one of those writers, and many of my colleagues and peers are the same. I don't believe writers, you're not a writer if you don't read. How can you write if you don't read? You know, I read probably just as much as I write, or close to. And so part of my writing is reading. Part of my writing is developing my characters.
Right.
Part of my writing is world building. So if the story's not there, like I have too many ideas and the story's not there, then I focus on world building. You know, I got to get this world right. You know, things have to make sense. You know, if it's a different culture, what are they doing? How do the buildings look, the structure? What foods are they eating? What are they wearing? You know, the language that they're speaking, you know, and then I go back and sometimes, you know, I'll go back and do passes. I'll do a word pass. Do you know, in the book that you read, I think I was speaking this way for a few years. I used to say so all the time, start all my sentences out with so. And I looked in that book and I thought I had maybe 1,000 different so's. I had to go through and get rid of them and change it. So there's no writer's block. There's so many things that I have to do, you know, to get this thing polished that there's not a time where I'm like, I can't write today. You know,
yeah, my characters would oftentimes start off with well when they were responding to something.
Yeah.
And I actually had an editor get on to me. She said, where is this coming from? Why do they always say all and they're saying well? And it's like, because that's what I do. I'll go back and I'll take them out.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's natural, though.
Another one is the word and. I mean, I can't tell you on my first, second, third books how many red lines I saw through the word
yeah.
And with commas and everything. I mean, no, forget the word and. It doesn't exist. Use a comma.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Now I don't use the word so much anymore. Like you probably don't use so much anymore.
No.
And Richard doesn't use well because I've read his stuff.
Yeah. So I got a quick question for you. Do you catch yourself when you've got a character that has maybe an exotic accent or one that you don't speak in? Do you catch yourself every once in a while when you're writing out an email or you're talking where that character's voice kind of creeps into what you're writing and saying?
I haven't done that, but I can see how that can happen.
I did that. I wrote a character who's a kind of a space pirate, and he had the typical Pirate of the Caribbean kind of way of talking. And I, for the life of me, every time I'd say, "I want you to get my car," I would come out with, "I want you to get me car." And I'm like, "Where is this coming from? Why do you, this story is months old. Why am I still talking like this guy?" You know, I just wonder if I'm the only crazy lunatic who does that.
Oh, yeah, I think you are, actually.
Okay, good, good. I hope I'm the only one.
But I'll bet you anything, you go back and say your dialogue out loud, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. All the time.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all do that. And I think it's to get it right.
Yeah. You know, because it's so, I don't know who told me that, but once you read it out loud, you think it's perfect, and then you read it out loud.
It's totally different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's when punctuation comes in. You go, "Wow, I need a comma there."
Right.
You know, or dot, 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 or hyphen, you know. And how many times are people cut off in conversations?
Yeah. I think it was David Gerald, I think, who might have told me, you know, just go and sit down and listen to people's conversations. They don't finish their sentences all the time. They cut each other off. So there's a thin line between writing like that and then it being too, annoying or too, you know, taking people away from the story.
Right.
And nobody speaks in perfect English either. So people who keep emailing me that the line of dialogue needs to be rewritten, that's the way the guy talks.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I used to tell editors, don't mess with the dialogue.
Yeah.
And that is something you can't get through a lot of their heads because they think they got to fix everything.
Yeah.
I still do, I guess. I'm kind of like honorary. I started the group. I used to belong to a critique group. We called it Show Fan. I named it that because it's SC is science fiction, HO horror, and then fantasy, Show Fan. And I remember my first novel that never came out. It was, oh my gosh, it was terrible. And I was trying, one of my characters was Jamaican, and I wrote it using a Jamaican accent every time they read. And all of the people in the group said it was so distracting. And that's when I learned that you if you use a different accent or, you know, a different dialect, you know, to be as minimalistic as possible, because it can take you out, you know, take the reader out of the story.
Right, right. And, you know, Richard and I found out the hard way that we wrote a book together called Last Lonely Trail. And one of the characters is from Texas, and one of the characters is a Texan from New Mexico. And the guy who did the audio book for us, we had to keep telling all these people who were trying it out, no, don't put an accent in there. It's already written in the dialogue. Just read straight. You'll get it.
Yeah.
And it finally took, what, four or five guys till we finally got. Yeah. They all tried to make it sound like Texas. And, oh, my God, it was terrible. And so, you know, leave the dialogue alone. Just read it the way it is.
Yeah.
It's like my book, The Return. I mean, there's a lot of Cajun in there. But if you just read it, it sounds Cajun.
Yeah.
You know? So, hey, what can I say? We're going to be right back. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we'll be back right after this short, brief message from Creative Edge. Hi, Jim Christina here for Creative Edge Publicity. And, you know, there's a reason that authors flock to Creative Edge. Yes, it's true, and no one would believe it, but it is true. Creative Edge, the grassroots publicity firm that has stayed community-minded, is growing. And not only growing, but busting right out of their seams. With a client base of over 70 authors, 2 New York Times bestsellers, 6 USA Today bestsellers, and multiple international bestsellers and award winners, Creative Edge in 4 years has become one of the mainstays in the publicity book market, offering reader-focused opportunities in all levels of media, including podcasts, radio, TV, print, and much more. When it comes to publicity, Mickey Mickelson and Creative Edge are experts in the book industry. Look him up at www.creative-edge.services.
Creative Edge. It's your brand, your future.
And that, of course, is our friend and publicist, Mr. Mickey Mickelson, and whom we have to thank for having you on the program this week. So in the time we have left, Ace, why don't you give our listeners an opportunity to find out how to find you, where to write to you if they want to.
Yes, sir.
Find your books.
Yeah, okay, so the first thing is I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. So all of my books from Awari Mosaic on, I'm using my middle name, my real middle name, which is N-Z-O-N-D-I. It's pronounced right. Like E-N-Z-O-N-D-E-E, Nzondi. Nzondi. And so if you want to find me on Instagram, you can look up Ace Antonio Hall, Nzondi in parentheses, N-Z-O-N-D-I. On Twitter, it's Nzondi3, the number 3, N-Z-O-N-D-I, and the number 3 on Twitter. And on Facebook, I think I have about 10 different Facebooks. But if you, it's the one that's Ace Antonio Hall. And right now, I'm using the profile picture of my new book that's coming out through Omnium Gatherum called Lipstick Asylum. And you'll see some really creepy eyes. That will be the profile.
Another comedy. Another comedy.
You know what? For the longest time, I didn't like my zombies being funny. You know,
they can be.
By the way, Resident Evil just came out with a new anime cartoon on Netflix. I watched the first episode. It just came out today.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, very cool to watch. That's kind of how I started in zombies. Playing the Resident Evil video game back in 1995.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say that our time with you is over. Feel free to hang out if you'd like. We usually hang out after the show a little bit and do some chatting. Cool. But we want to thank you so much for joining us. It was a real hoot having you, and I really do truly hope you come back and visit us again.
Love to. Thanks for having me. Really,
it's my pleasure. Truly, it was our pleasure. And next time, Bobby Jean, I hope to be here, and she can get a little taste of Mr. Ace Antonio Hall. Because it was wonderful having you.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's been a hoot. I really had a great time. Thanks.
Well, we appreciate your time with us, Richard.
Well, next time you're on, we'll ask you who your favorite Sherlock Holmes actor is, and why is it Jeremy Brett?
mine is Basil Rathbone, and I think it's Basil Rathbone because I remember he was Van Helsing in the Dracula movies with Christopher Lee.
Okay, that was back in the before time when the pterodactyls were still flying. Come on,
yeah, right. You're just a young tipper. I remember they used to scare hell out of me. Mm-hmm. Christopher Lee's Dracula, holy mackerel! When he turned around, his eyes would be all red, and his teeth would be oh my god, oh.
Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee.
I had to go to the movies, but I used to sit with my hands over my eyes and my ears because I didn't want to see that part. Anyway, thanks again for joining us, Ace. And if you want, hang out for a little bit. Okay, next week we have a return guest. His name is Mr. Dale Jackson, D.B. Jackson, the writer of such wonderful things as Small Moving Parts and some Westerns. Right now he's working on 2 screenplays, which we will be talking about next week. We're going to talk about preparation for screenplays and how you get them written and how you get them sold, which ought to be an interesting, very interesting conversation with Mr. Jackson. I had lunch with him yesterday, and he's all raring to go. So he incidentally lives up near my secret studio in the Sawtooth Mountains. So, and with that being said, Mr. Richard Polinelli and I and the brief owners of Tuscany Bay Books, we have picked up 2 new authors, and we're working on one from a young lady from India. Mm-hmm. And she is from India. And she sent us an email, which we actually have to send her back an email back and say, you need to do the submission page. Yeah. But other than that, it looks like it might be an interesting story. Yeah. From what I read on the email that she sent. So anyway, if you have something you want published and you don't know where to go, come to Tuscany Bay Books. I'm sure we can do you justice. And so for Richard Polinelli, myself, Bobby Jean Bell, who, of course, is not here, Mr. Russ Avison, who will be here with us next week, and Mr. Sam Hassan, who just wonderfully got a hold of that something that is right and threw it in the mix. Thank you, Sam. And for the rest of the people who make this show possible, my wife included, the bookie herself, Jerry Christina, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.